Cloud. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our NEPT case study call for the month of September 2018. Quite frankly, I can't believe it's September. I keep thinking it's April because this year has just flown by. It's crazy. It's totally insane. So I don't like this time of year. Not because I don't like the weather. The weather is still beautiful. But what I don't like about this time of year is it feels like it's the end of this weather. And all I have to look forward to is November and December and January, which I hate. So I'm just hoping that goes as fast as this other time did. And it'll soon be April again. Yay. My treatise on the weather. So anyway, I'm glad to be here. We have two cases that have been submitted. Before we go over them, I wanted to review. I see Lynette. Do I see Eleanor? Yeah, I saw Eleanor earlier. Where's she? Oh, did she just? Oh, there she is. I see Eleanor. So Eleanor and Lynette submitted cases. So I want to get you prepared for how we're going to do cases in the future. It's not going to be that much different for you, but I just discovered Google Forms. And they are amazing and they're easy to work with. And I created a Google form for submitting cases. And what that's going to do for me, it's going to make it so much easier, is I won't have to download your files and upload your files, or Lynn actually does that for me, but she won't have to do that. And we won't have to worry about that. But it's also going to be all in one spreadsheet. So we can go back and just keep track, and it's just going to be good. And we'll know who submitted cases easily. And anyway, so it won't be that much different. But we will be starting that probably on the next one. And we're also going to start a system before each regular call of having a little RSVP button in the email that says, I'm coming, I'm not coming. And if you're not coming, you can submit a question anyway if there's something you want covered. And if you are coming and you have particular questions that you already know you want answered, put them in there, because we'll do a first come, first serve type of thing. So then I'll know who to go to on the call. And, you know, if you have to leave early or whatever, you can state that in there. But it'll also help us keep track of who's coming, so I know who to expect and how many to expect. So just a little something that we'll be putting into place probably next week. Eleanor, was Eleanor's one that came in first, or was it Lynette's? Because it's alphabetical. And was Eleanor? Okay. No, it was Lynette. Okay, we'll start with Lynette. Where's Lynette? You were there a minute ago, Lynette. Come on back.
I'm at the nail salon. Can you make me second today?
Sadie. Oh, you want me second? Okay, sure.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. All right. So Eleanor, come on down.
Hello. Hello, everybody.
Hello. Can you turn on your video so we can kind of connect?
I'm kind of ugly tonight.
That's true every day. So not for you, but for me. I mean, I don't get dressed. I just throw on, you know.
Can you see me?
And gets on and goes like this to her hair. I don't think I've washed mine in 3 or 4 days.
Oh,
so.
My goodness. There I am.
You look great.
Okay. I look a little pale.
So Lynette submitted a case, and what we're going to do for these, because I want these to be as much of a help experience for you, like it helps you with your case, but as much of a learning experience it is for you and everybody else. So what I want you to do is all of us get used to presenting the case, right? Just tell us, you have your form, right? So you know exactly who she is. So present the case like it's in the form. You know, this is a 27-year-old woman. I know she's older than that, who's, you know, mildly overweight, weighs this much, whatever. Just represent the case and then tell us what you're really wanting. Like, this is what I'm thinking. This is what I've done. And then I don't know what to do next, or what labs should I do, or I submitted labs and I'd love your help interpreting it. Okay.
Okay. And I didn't print it out, so I'm going to try to do it from memory, but okay.
I'll bring it up on the screen so everybody can see it too.
Okay.
Okay.
So this is a 29-year-old young lady. She's actually in pretty good health. I've been working with her for a while. I started working with her because she was getting headaches, and she had stomach pains occasionally, and acid reflux and constipation, and neck pain. But we've come a long way. I did a test on her, and she had H. pylori, which was treated and eliminated the stomach pains, and her acid reflux is much better, gone away, except if she eats certain foods. The neck pains are still a problem. I've done lots of things with her with neck pains, trying to give her exercises, trying to give her the correct way to stand. She's a mobile laptop user, trying to get her to use the stand like I'm using right now as much as possible, stop looking down at your iPhone, all this kind of stuff. So we've had a lot of progress. She still gets the headaches, not as often. The constipation, I checked her. Luckily, I just thought to check her for magnesium, and she was deficient. And so I put on magnesium. She's low in vitamin D. And she does have some compliance issues. You know, she has kind of a hectic lifestyle, so remembering to take all her supplements is a problem. But the main thing I'm dealing with right now is she's trying to control her moods, and she has two things that's happening. You know, she has her in a work world. If she's close to her menstrual cycle, she can't control her emotions at work. The other thing is that when she gets hungry, I was talking about this on the other call. She last week, I think it was, she gets angry if she gets hungry and she can't make it to the next meal. She's got to eat right away. So I did do a stool test just because I was concerned about serotonin, you know, and all the things the gut controls. And I got the results back, and it looks like she's in pretty good shape with the gut. That's why I included those tests, and I wanted to get your opinion on that. It looks like the two things that they're showing for her are normal things that appear in the stool. So,
is this the same test you did originally that showed the H. pylori?
Yes, it is.
And did what showed? What's changed? Have were there other bacteria besides H. pylori?
No, just H. pylori.
H. pylori. Okay.
And so, if I'm interpreting this right, she's got pretty much normal bacteria, not at an alarmingly high level, right? That's one question I have for you. So do you want me to stop there, or you want?
Hang on. Let's look at this for a second. So microscopy sample one, well, it looks like they found blastocystis hominis in all of the stools. They found no ova, no trichosome. And a few yeasts. So I wouldn't say that's a normal stool.
Well, not this person, but another person I went to, I kept peeling back the onion on the stool, and I actually got a consultant on the phone from there that tells me after a while there are bacteria in that. You're not going to remove all bacteria from the stool. So that's why I'm kind of...
Yeah, but blastocystis hominis isn't a bacteria. It's a parasite.
It's a parasite, okay.
And it's something you don't want to have in your stool sample.
Okay.
Okay, so that could explain some of her gut stuff. They didn't find any Giardia. They didn't find any Helicobacter or Cryptosporidium. So definitely yeast, too. But, you know, so that might not be a big problem. But I know that when people have yeast issues, they won't go away unless the blasto is gotten rid of.
Okay.
So let's just look at the rest of this. And let me just see. NG, I've got to remember what their NG is, no growth. So no growth for Citrobacter. E. coli is +3. Klebsiella is +3. Proteus, nothing. So I wouldn't say this is normal. I mean, does anybody have any feedback on this? But to me, this doesn't look normal. I would have wanted to see no NG on the bacteria. I mean, what I don't like about this particular test is that they don't tell you commensals, the normal flora. They don't do the lactobacillus, so we can see how that's in balance. But, I mean, Klebsiella is not something you want growing in there, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing about this test. When you read it, it tells, you know, they tell you this is normal stuff, and we tell you how much. You know, it doesn't tell you, okay, they're at a problem level. So I'm assuming that they would tell you, and that's why I wanted you to help me interpret it, whether it's the normal, this is normal stuff and she's got a normal amount, because they don't tell you what is the problem level, you know, if this stuff is normal.
Well, 3 is moderate, 4 is abundant, So you certainly four is abundant would be bad. So moderate is just a little bit below that. So I would want her to be an NG for most of them, or maybe one. Okay. Again, they don't tell you the species. There are some E. coli that are normal flora. There's some E. coli that are commensals, and then there's some E. coli that are pretty pathogenic. So they don't differentiate the species. But Klebsiella, I don't know any normal flora Klebsiella. You know, and at a 3+ Klebsiella, 3+ E. coli plus blasto, I would say this person needs some intervention here. Right? Now we don't know what her lacto is. We don't know what her bifido is. So that's, you know, because like the doctor's data test, for example, will tell us where those are. And sometimes if the levels of bacteria or parasite or yeast is mild enough, then we just crowd them out. Like, I'd rather crowd people out than kill them. You know, I mean, same thing in my house. I have invaders in my house. I don't want to shoot them with a gun. I'd rather just push them out the door and, you know, pull in some good people in the back door to push the old bad people out the front door. And that's how I think about it in the gut. You know, there's the good guys, there's the bad guys. Some of the bad guys are okay to live in there as long as they don't outnumber the good guys. Mm-hmm. But when they start to outnumber the good guys, we want to pull in more good guys to shove the bad guys out. And that's how I think about it.
Okay.
Okay. So I don't know that. So I would just assume, does she get any, first of all, you want to, in order to determine like what, without doing further testing, in order to determine what's the best course of probiotics, you want food-based is usually best, right? So kefir and sauerkraut and kimchi and all that kind of stuff. But you want to ask the question, when you take probiotics or have probiotic-containing foods, do you get a big bloated belly? Because that would be a sign of potential SIBO, in which case there's only a few strains, four that I know of, that I'd feel comfortable giving somebody with a SIBO issue to start to replenish the flora. So is that something you know, whether she gets...
I know she drinks, you said kimchi, it's kombucha.
Kombucha?
Yeah, she drinks the kombucha a lot. The lowest sugar one, I think, is the cranberry one, because that was one part of my concern with her drinking that. So she drinks that and doesn't complain about bloating with that. So
now the one thing about kombucha is it could contain, usually does contain wild yeasts. So if somebody does have a candida overgrowth, it's probably not best. This is what I do instead. Kavita, it's a sparkling probiotic beverage. It's got your probiotics in it, but it's a kefir kind of thing. It's like a water kefir.
Okay.
Right.
So it's better than kombucha.
Than kombucha. Kombucha can be problematic and it can grow some weird strains of stuff in there.
Okay.
So that would be good. But I would look at when in doubt, right? If you don't know how she's going to react, you can start with Bifidobacter. Usually, I would say that if I looked at all my stool tests over the years, probably 80 to 90% of them had low Bifidobacter. It's a lot. It's low in most people. And the reason it gets low in a lot of people is that there's a couple of reasons. One is that most of the probiotics don't contain much bifido. If you look at the percentage and the amount of bifido compared to the other stuff, it's much smaller because it's more expensive.
Oh, okay.
And number two is there is a percentage of the population, and it might even be up to 20, I think it's 20% of the population, that has a genetic SNP called FUT2, which will basically prevent the good care and feeding of your bifido. I have about 7 of those SNPs. So I make sure I take my probiotic foods every day, 3 times a day, because I want to make sure that I get my bifido. Mm-hmm. So that's a possibility. So you can always be safe by doing bifido, and you can always be safe by doing, and large doses, because large doses have been shown, like in the 100, 200, 300, 400 billion doses, have been shown to really help push out some of the pathogens.
Okay. Is there a Claire product that you would recommend?
Yeah, there is. There's that Claire has just pure bifido. I think it's a 4-strain bifido. Okay. And then they also have something called lactate free. And I'm pretty sure Claire used to have it. There's 2 companies that have it, Claire and Custom Probiotics. But Claire definitely has the bifido.
Okay.
And the thing is, I would start people there if I'm not sure, and then start asking them, oh, when you eat this kind of food, when you have sauerkraut, if you have taken probiotics in the past, have you gotten any bloating? You know, chances are that she doesn't and it's fine and you can just put her on a broad spectrum. But the Bifido has so many positive benefits that, and it also has benefits for mood. So I think that, you know, that could be very helpful. There is one that specifically affects GABA if she tends to be this high stressed, if you suspect GABA. And one of the things I would recommend you all get is this book called The Edge Effect. I actually got it for $3 on Amazon used. And it's not new. It's probably a 10-year-old book. Let's see. 2004. But what I like in here, it has these little questionnaires to help figure out where a person, if they have a neurotransmitter imbalance, what's their tendency towards for it. And then it has lots of really nice lists of specific foods, specific exercises, specific things they can eat and not eat to help support that. And so if somebody's having a neurotransmitter type imbalance or the anxiety, then, you know, it's definitely something that you can look at. We have that in the site, in the history taking. We have a little one, a mini version of this. But he has a really nice long questionnaire, and it really helps you to identify. And then you go, oh, she tends towards low serotonin. Or she tends towards low GABA. And then you can think about what foods, what probiotics and various things could support it. I think it's Lactobacillus, is it Helveticus? There's one that really helps support GABA, and I'm drawing a blank. But if you were to go do a Google search and say probiotics, GABA,
okay,
it'll show the particular strain that produces GABA. I think it's Lactobacillus Helveticus, but, you know, I'm not good at those, remembering those little names. I like to really end up looking them up. But that's something to look at for her.
Okay.
But, you know, so you can start with crowding it out. But if you wanted to use something to get rid of it, I mean, there's a number of options. Again, they don't do the sensitivity test at this lab like Dr. Data would. But there's things that are known to be good for Klebsiella. I know Steph has a whole long list. I don't know if she's on the call right now, because if you are, Steph, open your line. She has a whole long list of things that she has found, specific individual herbs. Now, with compliance being an issue, I don't think she's going to be one that's going to comply with Steph's little fun and games, you know, elixir forming thing where you take this and that and you mix this and you mix that. I think she's going to be more wanting a tincture or a capsule that she could take.
Yeah.
Biocidin tends to be a good broad spectrum one, but whatever
Biocidin.
B-I-O-C-I-D-I-N.
B-I-O-C-I-D-I-N. Okay.
Yeah. And they have good studies. They have really good research that shows that they do kill off stuff. Now, here's the thing. People get desensitized to this stuff. The bugs get resistant. You know how we get antibiotic resistant bugs? The same thing can happen with the herbals. So I like to put them on a rotation. Now, since she has some, and biocidin can be good for parasites as well. It has some artemisians and I think some wormwood in it. But another one that's good is Allergy Research has one called tricyclin. And they have some stuff for both bacteria and parasites, and I think fungal too, so it could help with the yeasties. So I would look at getting her maybe three different ones that she could rotate, like a week on, week on, week on, and then switch around and do it again. So if you do it much longer than that, because these guys multiply pretty quickly. They're not like us that we last 100 years. They, you know, a few days and boom, they get resistant and then they pass it on. And then the ones that die are the weak ones. And the ones that are resistant are the ones that live. And then they just multiply and multiply. And now you have a whole strain of resistant organisms in the gut, which makes it harder. Make sense?
Yes. But I am confused between the Biosyn and the Allergy Research. Are those probiotics or are those herbs?
No, those would be if you wanted to kill them off, right?
Okay.
Right. So you can start with the gentle approach of pushing them out with the probiotics.
Okay.
You can talk to her, right? And say, look, we have this choice. I always like to give people those kind of choices. We can, you know, crowd them out or we can shoot them with machine guns.
Okay.
Right. Okay. And you run the risk if you shoot them with the machine guns of these dead bodies all over the floor. right? You have to clean it up. That happens the same thing when you kill off bugs, that their cell walls open up and release the endotoxins that are in there.
Right. And, you can have a lot of side effects from that, right?
Good. Right. And you go really slowly when you're doing that. So okay. I would probably start with the crowding out.
Okay.
See how she feels symptomatically. And then if she wants to then try doing the other two, then at least you've got a couple of weeks worth of getting the flora up.
Okay.
Right. Really, really putting that up there. And I would do several, I would work up to several hundred thousand, at least for a week or two, of several hundred thousand units a day of the probiotics. And if you get her to start to do the foods, which, you know, with the compliance issues, she's 29, she's got a busy lifestyle. She may not be open to that, but you can get so many probiotic foods. This is my latest favorite. Got this at Whole Foods. See it? Coco-Yo?
Coco-Yo.
It is phenomenal. And the ingredients are raw young coconut water, probiotic cultures, and 100% pure love. And it's basically, when you open it up, it's all bubbly. And it's got that really nice tart feeling. And it's like making it at your own, but it's in a jar. You can buy it conveniently at Whole Foods. So
what do? You spread it on something?
I eat it out of the jar.
Oh, you do? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you can put it in a bowl. You can put some, you make like a pudding out of it. You can add it to chia and make it, There's so many things you could do with it. You can make it a dessert. You can put blueberries on it. I mean, whatever you want to do with it. I eat it out of the jar. My lunch today was this. And a green smoothie. Raised my blood sugar all the way up to 72.
Okay.
So it's a really nice meal.
Yeah.
And probiotics. Wow. My critters were happy. My blood sugar was happy. I was happy. My brain was super happy because my brain loves it when I stay in the 60s and 70s. So anyway, that's an option too, to start to get her to eat some of those, more fun. It's a yogurt basically, but it's way better than Dannon. I mean, truly does have live cultures. How many times have you opened up the jar of Dannon or the container of Dannon, if you ever ate that in the past, and watched it go bubbly and have all the little, the little holes in it, and then have this wonderful fermentation smell. So, getting her to really tune into that, I took it downstairs already, but I had, my dinner was this cauliflower rice and almost a whole jar. Of kimchi, a daikon radish kimchi. And again, feeding my good flora, right?
Yeah.
So if you could get her to start to feed her good guys, do that for a few weeks. And then if, you're still feeling like it's not taking care of it, you can always do a low dose of this biocidin and the artemisia and maybe pick a third one. Trying to think of a third combo product that's good. Oh, the... doesn't have bacterial though. That's the scram from that we just addressed the others. Anybody have any other favorite combos for those? Are the two? There's a third one I know I can't think of. That has that combo of bacteria and bacteria and what and. Yeah, so you could just go to a combo of Artemisia annua with berberine or something like that for the
The berberine, the oregano, and there was a third one that I was thinking might be a good combination thing.
Yeah, and those are in like the different ones. But this, since she has compliance issues, right? I'm thinking if you have one thing this week, the third week, maybe it's two things. So yeah, you give her a combination of the berberine if she'll take oregano too, and then artemisia for the blasto.
Okay.
Okay. And with, see a lot of people, the other thing I see a lot of the time is resistance to the berberine. I'll run a stool test and I look at it and it's like this, all this bacteria, but it's resistant to berberine and oregano. And I think it's because there's berberine and oregano in so many combo formulas and people are just like willy-nilly everything take berberine and oregano. It's like become the penicillin of our natural world. And people are getting resistant. Okay. So I don't like to do more than a week on any one thing.
Okay, so you did think, because I was going after the gut for the mood, and this could...
Yeah, oh, definitely no. Could affect the mood because if her probiotic is, her microbiome isn't straight. And then look up, do the GABA, let me do that real quick while I have you here, is the GABA, I know I looked it up once before and I got, really, I think it was Helvetica, but it may be something else. That was GABA, G-A-B-A, pro...
You are right, Dr. Rita Marie. It is Helvetica.
It is Helvetica? Oh,
yes.
Good. I'm glad I
just posted a clip from a study, so you have the information on the...
Well, here's one. I just found it. Was this the one? I wonder if it's the same one. Copy. Probiotics and manipulation of bacteria gut brain signals. So this might be similar to what you put. So, oh, thank you. I'm glad I had that memory. Oh my God. Sometimes I don't trust what just comes out of my mouth without it actually stopping in my brain and connecting to something and being clarified or verified. Let's see. What did Eva put in? Eva put in a study to investigate possible effects of anxiety, depression, stress, a probiotic Lactobacillus helveticus and Bifido. So the Bifido and the Helveticus combination could really be good for her mood. Look at that anger, hostility.
Wow. Look at that.
So there you go.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Get her to take that combination of Helveticus and Bifidus. And I'd take some good doses, but build her up to it. Have her do that for a couple of weeks and just see if that helps. If that helps alone, then, you know, just keep going with it long enough to crowd everything out. And then you can read the rest in a while. Rhamnosis.
Good.
That's the other one I was thinking of. Rhamnosis.
Well, say it again.
Rhamnosis, Lactobacillus rhamnosis. See it on, Lynn Rose put it in the chat.
There it is, I see. No, release endotoxins, wait, I didn't see it yet.
I didn't read this article, I just found it, but it's basically, you're on the right track with trying to affect her brain by her gut.
Okay, good.
And, yeah.
So then...
The thing about the anger between meals is, I know you had a, thing here with the...
I sent you her blood work only because, you suggested that even though her glucose is not really problematic, it might be the insulin, that you thought I should run some blood work on her insulin. And she's got the low vitamin D, so you're like, don't underestimate the vitamin D. That's what we talked about the other day. Yeah. But you don't really see anything on her blood.
Her alk-phos is low. So zinc may be a problem, and zinc's really important for neurotransmitters and for blood sugar and adrenals. Her triglyceride HDL ratio is okay. Her HDLs are a little low. Her LDLs are fine. Her cholesterol total is fine. White cell count, MCV is high.
Which is bad.
I would recommend don't just take these things, put them in the blood, the tracker.
Because
I don't like reading them this way. I like reading them in the tracker. But her MCV is high. So B12 I'd be looking at.
Well, the other thing you say about MCV, I think, is it bacterial. Oh, no, it's the lympho, not the other thing that's...
Let me see. Lymphocytes. Yeah, her lymphs are a little low. Her neutrophils are a little high. So that suggests bacteria, and that may correspond with the gut. Her basophils are 0.3, her eosinophils are 0.9, so that's not consistent with parasite. Her TSH is 0.80. Her vitamin D is very low, so you definitely have to work on that. Her hemoglobin A1C is fine, but then it might be, like I said, up and down. So I would say look at insulin.
And just do a regular insulin test, you're saying?
Yeah, just do fasting insulin and see what it comes out to be.
Okay, that is the blood work for insulin that you see on Direct Labs, right?
Yeah, just insulin.
Yeah, just insulin. Yeah. Okay, wanted to make sure. Okay.
Yeah. And then you get an idea. Does she do any pricking?
Well, after the last time we spoke, you and I spoke, I said, which would you prefer to prick or to go for blood work? And she said, I'd rather do a one-time deal because I'll be at work. I can't, be.
I'm going to just suggest that don't offer those as if they're equivalent.
Okay.
Because they're not.
Yeah, and that was actually a question I had. How would you, if I were to explain to her the pros and cons of each?
There's no cons to pricking your finger. except it hurts.
Well, I mean, as far as being able to pinpoint what the issue is, if we find
nothing beats a glucometer and testing throughout the day, because then you get the real deal. Hemoglobin A1C is going to give you an average, and right. If she's got spikes and dips, it's going to average out to nice, which hers did. But if her insulin is high, you could just do one thing and insulin is high, it's going to suggest that probably those dips she's feeling is a hypoglycemic low from the insulin being high, right? And everything she does goes whoop, and her sugar goes way down. It goes too far down, but it's a glucose dysregulation process. So I'd be looking at what she's eating, right? You said she eats pretty well, but you know, what about grains? What about breads, even if it's gluten-free? Is she gluten-free?
Dairy? No.
No, okay. There you go. Right there, right then and there. You know, if she's got anger issues, if she's got blood sugar issues, you know, I personally tell people, look, I see this, unless you're willing to do a trial of gluten-free to see if this is what it is, because I know that that can help. I don't know that I can help you any further than I did, right? Because they've got to do the foundations. They've got to do the foundations. And if they're eating gluten, it's usually they're eating refined food, even if it's whole grain bread, because that's a refined food that's going to shoot sugar up.
Yeah, she eats Ezekiel. You know, she eats the Ezekiel breads.
It's a high glycemic food. She eats the Ezekiel bread, and then she has this high, and then the insulin drops it down to super low, and then she's starving and can't make it. Again, classic. It's very classic hyperinsulinemia. Yeah. Yeah, so I would be looking at that. You can tell her to do it one day. If you can get somebody to prescribe one of these continuous meters where all she has to do is hold it up and go like that to test, you know, that's a really cool way. It's a little pricey, but if she gets her, she can get somebody to prescribe it and just do it for a month.
Okay. Yeah, I think that this is enough to start on. I mean, the other thing I was going to look at was, of course, the hormones, because she has, I mean, she would love to be able to control her emotions when she has her period. But
here's the thing, hon. You can run a lot of tests, but I think it's a waste to run a lot of tests if somebody's eating crap, you know, or eating not right for their condition. Do you know what I mean? You're not going to find anything there. And what we're going to say to fix it is the basics. Stress, what does she do for stress? Does she meditate? Does she do heart math? How's her sleep? Is she sleeping, you know, 8 hours a night, 7 hours a night? How's the timing of her meals, which sucks, right? Because she can't go. And anybody that can't go more than 2 hours without eating, without getting ridiculously off the charts angry, usually has a hyperinsulinemia.
Yeah, and so it's not 2 hours. It's, you know, if she can't get to lunch, she'll get really hungry and get angry, right? Like, if I can't get to lunch, well, I might skip lunch, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
When I get to it, right? So, but she has to eat.
Yeah, she has
to. That's the way she describes it. I have to eat. I couldn't do intermittent fasting. I could never do that, she says. I could never skip a meal.
Yeah. So you got to get to the heart of that. Before you start digging for more, you know, yes, you uncovered something in the stool, which is great. But before you start digging more into hormones, work on what you have.
Right, right.
And work on identifying if she has a blood sugar imbalance, which I'm, you know, 99% sure that there's some blood sugar imbalance there.
Okay. Okay. And the only other thing that is just a one-off that she told me recently that she, you know, on her collarbone, she has a little bump that's moving around.
Mm-hmm.
And now her shoulder's starting to hurt. I was thinking this is like her lymph system going across her collarbone.
Yes,
and
there's a lot of lymph in there.
There's and so if you get a bump, it's probably a temporary thing, right?
Is it movable? First of all,
it's movable.
Yeah, if you can pick up a bump and lift it and hold it between your fingers, it's in the subcutaneous or the soft tissue. So it's generally going to be movable. It's not going to be like a cancer.
Okay.
If it's tender, it's more likely to be a lymph node, you know, slightly tender to touch. And and then, you know, feel all along here. There's all the chain of lymph nodes here. There's lymph nodes up and down, you know, the front and back of this muscle here, the sternocleidomastoid, and feel into the armpit. So there's something, you know, some inflammation going on somewhere. The drainage from there is actually breast tissue, right? Drains up.
Oh, okay.
Or if there's something in her arm, right? If she had an infection of some sort in her arm.
Okay.
That could be it. Usually the head, the neck ones drain up into the head, or the neck problems. If you have a problem with a tooth, you're going to feel it in the sub here, and then you're going to feel it in some of these, right? Okay. Or a throat infection or a sinus infection. But usually if they're down below the clavicle, it's draining. It's coming up from the breast or the arm.
Yeah, that was actually my question. Why would cause it to be in that area? And you're saying it's this, the breast and the arm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And if she does caffeine, I mean, it's a possibility she has some fibrocystic breast tissues, tissue that she should look at. Iodine may be an issue. She only has a TSH and it's low, so that doesn't tell us anything. She's normal weight, so that's not going to, you know, there doesn't seem to be some obvious thyroid symptoms. But it could be something, could be a thyroid thing that would come over here. Cause
it would? Okay.
I think
so. She did have a very good doctor that actually felt something on her thyroid at one point.
Did feel, yeah.
Yeah, but they checked her and there was nothing, so.
Okay, yeah, so they did a scan then, an ultrasound or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so that's
a lot to go. What could be feeding that? So it's... the area of the body that could be feeding that. That was exactly my question.
Yeah. Have her do a breast exam to see about breast tissue. And you could have her do an iodine load test to see if she has a problem. And iodine, if there is a breast tissue or something brewing, iodine spread on the breast tissue is very, very helpful for breaking down those cysts, you know, fibrocystic breasts. So ask her if she has a tendency to fibrocystic breasts.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes. And so actually putting iodine liquid on
the... you just put liquid iodine on the breast, right? And for fibroids, there have even been really good case studies of women who've put iodine on the vulva for fibroids and have them shrink fibroids.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's not the iodine like you use, like they send you home from the hospital to have a baby.
It's I don't know what's in that. You know,
it's actually a little bottle of iodine.
Little bottle. Apex has it. There's a number of them. Lugol's solution is fine. You can get that anywhere. J. Crow's, Lugol's on Amazon. Little bottle.
Okay. Yeah.
Something pure. I don't trust what they send you home in the hospital unless I can verify
it's what's in there. Benzidine or something. It's something
in there.
Squirt. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Great. Thank you. Lots of good stuff. Thank you.
Great. All right. Let me put that one down and then we'll go to your back home. That looks good. Dear Lynette.
Hello.
Hello. So tell us about your case.
All right. So this person has been myself has been chasing health for a while. A couple of years ago, did the Dutch test, found that stage 3 adrenal fatigue, started to address that, started feeling better, started sleeping better. About this past spring, did the oat test, and the oat test showed both Clostridia and Candida. Has since been treating the Clostridia based on the protocol given by Great Plains, which is Biocidin and Allicin every 3 days pulsing. And then I just sent in the test to retest for the microbial to make sure that the Clostridia is gone before starting to address the Candida. Fibrocystic breasts have been an issue in the past. Last year's mammogram showed a spot that was concerning. They wanted to do a biopsy, but refused the biopsy and instead started painting the breast with iodine. Recently had iodine test done at the doctor's office with the other labs that were taken, and the iodine levels showed at 69, which means that the iodine levels I think are good, but you know, looking for your feedback on that. Thyroid, I've been doing the whenever I get in the sauna, my thyroid swells up. And the test when I did the Great Plains oat test, I also did a glyphosate test and the toxins test, the mycotox. Both of those showed elevated toxins. Glyphosate was at the 100 percentile, which was shocking. Also high in MTBE and a couple of other toxins that were very, you know, concerning. So
starting where you were exposed to those? No.
No. The Great Plains person said that the glyphosate can a lot of times come from well water. She said it's not typical for her to see glyphosate that high. Mm-hmm. I do know that I do, and my SNPs have SNPs in my ability to detox. Mm-hmm. So that has definitely, you know, kind of explains why I would be holding on to those toxins. Mm-hmm. Started doing the Quicksilver Scientific detox protocol, which has a like a two-step process. It's got the liver flush and then followed up with a binder 30 minutes later. I noticed that when taking the liver flush and the glutathione, that again, my thyroid swells up. The recent blood work shows that my TPO has are elevated at up to 38, which is like way outside the range.
38.
Okay. Yeah, which is kind of freaking me out.
Okay. First of all, that is not a super. That's outside their range, but it's not. I've seen people in the thousands.
Okay.
And hundreds. So in the 38, and if it's under 100, then it's like, okay, guy, you got plenty of time to get this thing under order before it kills your thyroid. But when it's at 300, well, 300 is even low compared to some of them I've seen, 600, 800, 1,000, 1,700. So, yeah, 38 is something to be concerned about and work on, but not to freak out about.
Okay. Hormone levels completely crashed. I'm, like, not producing any hormones at all.
So this is a redo of the Dutch, or?
That was blood serum. The Dutch test, the last time I took it, which was about a year and a half ago, it did show that my, like, estrogen is, you know, non-existent. Testosterone.
Are you menopausal? Are you still period cycling?
No, the last period I had was in June, but that was the first one in, like, a really long time. Mm-hmm. And I had just started doing the detox protocol, the Quicksilver Scientific Detox Protocol.
That sometimes makes periods come back.
Right. Yep. Exactly. So, but I haven't had one since, which is weird. I'm having trouble sleeping again, waking up in the middle of the night, like almost every night. I have started putting myself to bed a lot earlier than I had been because I don't have any melatonin. Like I have zero melatonin on my Dutch test result. So I've started taking melatonin. I'm only taking 6 milligrams because I've read, you know, you're not supposed to really take that much. So I've been doing 6. I know that...
Yes.
Melatonin helps the brain detox. And so the other thing that I've been struggling with is like, there was a point in time when I felt like my brain was like, I felt like a crack, like in my brain, it was so weird. And like, I can feel my brain buzzing. It's the most bizarre feeling. So it's freaking me out, just freaking me out. And then the other thing is my feet like hurt, like really bad. Sometimes like it goes up and down. Like my feet are hurting and then they're okay. And then
like a hurting, like a achy hurt or a burning hurt or a sharp hurt.
Yeah. Like an aching hurt. Sometimes it's just in the bottom of my feet. Sometimes it goes up into my ankle and like my ankles are stiff. So I'm feeling like I've got some inflammation there.
Inflammation, right.
And this is, what's interesting is that I think, I'll just refresh your memory as well as other people that have followed, you know, kind of what I've been going through is that I had started doing a lot of the kombuchas and the fermented coconut waters and, you know, the fermented foods, the kimchi and so forth, and got a huge rash on my legs. So I'm obviously histamine, you know, histamine flush. So I did the food allergy test and it came back with that I'm allergic to yeast, bell peppers, and cabbage. So I've cut those things out of my diet and the rash went away. So,
well, it could not be then if you were starting to do kimchi and sauerkraut, those are loaded with cabbage, right? And a lot of them have bell pepper in it. So
I cut all those out. My liver enzymes are elevated, which tells me that I've got, you know, some fatty liver going on. I've been doing some support, a lot of support around my liver, just trying to get the liver support addressed. So I started taking inositol, which is actually helping with my food cravings. It's kind of shocking. I actually didn't expect that. So, like, I don't know what it's doing, but it's like I used to – I'm a snacker. And so I'll eat, but then I'll eat and then I'll eat. And so it was just really hard for me to, you know, do the three meals a day. Whereas when I'm on the inositol, I don't have that. It's really interesting.
Well, it's interesting because myo-inositol has been used a lot in PCOS and PCOS is very much tied to insulin resistance. So I'm wondering if it's balancing blood sugar.
Yes.
And then you're not getting the cravings in between your meals.
Right, exactly.
Do you measure your blood sugar?
I don't. I actually want to get a glucose monitor, continuous glucose monitor. So I was hoping to get a prescription from you. Or I actually have appointments with a thyroid hormone specialist on Thursday, and then also a functional medicine doctor on Thursday as well.
Well, ask them if they'll do it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them it's shocking. I'll tell people that, hey, get this thing. And then suddenly their doctors are going, oh, did you hear about this glucose meter? You want to, I'll give you a prescription for it if you'll do it. So, you know, I would definitely a functional medicine doc would be, open to it for sure.
So that's pretty much, I think I've mentioned everything. I recently did through Biomatrix because I've been doing the bioidentical hormones, like their standard dosage of all of them, DHEA, pregnenolone, progesterone, and estrogen, because I'm low on all of them.
Is that the over the counter or is that a prescription?
No, that's whatever I get from Biomatrix.
From Biomatrix, okay.
Yeah, so I did their hormone test. I just sent it in on Friday, so I'll get the results, you know, hopefully sometime this week. And then I also did a intestinal permeability test through them as well. I don't know if these are the tests that you would recommend, but I saw them on their website and they were reasonably priced, so I went ahead and did it. So I'm waiting for those test results to come back. So that's where I'm at. So what I'm looking for is, number one, the reassurance about the TPO levels, which you've kind of given me that. But just looking at, like, next steps, like how, just from an overall perspective, where do I go from here? You know, and you might, I uploaded the master tracker. I was just looking back through my results on the master tracker and noticing that quite a few of my levels are improving. So like my protein, my bun levels have improved. Yeah.
That's another reason for putting it there because you get to see, even though if you're not, you know, you're not noticing it, if it's not a dramatic improvement, but you see these just gradual
movement
in the right direction.
Right. So I was drinking coffee every morning, but I don't do caffeine. I just do the decaf. But I was using soy in my coffee and that was pretty much the only soy I was consuming, but I've been doing a lot of research on thyroid. And so I've decided, you know, that I need to ditch the soy. So
I ditched the coffee too, because it's the tannins are very acidifying.
Okay. So yeah, I haven't been doing coffee as much as I have been.
Yeah.
Once in a while, but it's not every morning like I was.
Yeah. So looking at habits, I'm looking at your negative habits. Where is it? I just saw them up here. So you have a lot of good habits, positive habits. So gluten-free flours, how often are you doing that?
Like once a week, maybe.
And then the kadaya, that's once a week too? Like what's your typical day? Is your typical day like all, you know, low glycemic high veggie food?
Yeah. I mean, I usually start my day with a green smoothie. Today I had green beans, garlic, and a diced potato for lunch. And then I followed it up with the leftovers with some quinoa and some leftover hamburgers that were made with oats. And I don't even know what else was in there, but just, you know, and that was dinner. So
I would, this is good for everybody to try, is the chronometer, and try it out with yourself and then look at for your clients. It's a really nice program online. It's very inexpensive. You can do it for free, or you can buy the $40 gold version of it. And it gives you some really nice reports, and you just put in everything you eat over the course of several days, and it will give you really beautiful charts of how much of each of the nutrients that you're getting. So, oh, you're at 40% of your magnesium intake for today, and 80% of your selenium, and 150% of your C, whatever, from your food. It also gives you your omega-3-6 ratios, because that's a really important piece that most of us overlook, right? I think about it a lot as I'm picking my foods. I'm thinking, oh, omega-3, omega-6, how do I balance it? There's a spreadsheet that you guys have in one of the, I think it's in the nutrient and the fat. Yeah, it's in the macronutrients, the fat section, one of those sections, or even in the done for you, there's a spreadsheet I put together with a fatty acid balance spreadsheet where you can put your numbers in and it'll calculate it just that. Or you can get the chronometer, which you can put all your food in and get an idea of your nutrient balance across the day. And it's kind of surprising, the people I've seen who seem like they're on a decent diet when their omega-6-3 ratios are way off. And that's going to create an inflammatory condition in the body, right? So I would look at that. I would also look at, now you've stopped the coffee, but make sure, but I would look at the pH, like to your morning urine and saliva pH. Because it's all those little basic things that we sometimes overlook, and we're looking for that special herb, that special balance, that special whatever. And in reality, it's really, really creating a stable base. And if you're eating multiple times, like you're eating in between meals, you're constantly elevating your insulin back up again. And insulin can be inflammatory, right? And so that could contribute to weight that won't come off. It can contribute to the brain fog, fatigue. So I would look at the, really come down to those basics.
What is, how do you know if I have thyroid resistance, and what does that look like, and
Yeah, so thyroid resistance is, there's no blood test for it. It's an exclusion test. So basically, you have normal thyroid numbers and you have thyroid symptoms. And when I say normal, I mean optimal. Like if you take the, like look into the, let me open up your, I'll change this share to your master tracker, which is an Excel sheet. It's going to make it easier when we do this with the other, with the form, because they'll all be in the same platform and I won't have to switch back and forth. I opened it up. Where is Excel? I thought I opened it up. Give me a second. That's that one. All right, let me go back to the, I thought I opened it up, but it doesn't look like it's open. At least according here. Cancel. Lynette, here, master tracker. There we go, Excel. I guess I didn't open it up. Okay, I'm going to change share to Excel. And so weird, I opened it up and it's not showing as a possibility here in whiteboard phone. What's that? Excel. There we go. I'll just share my whole screen. Okay. Can you guys see this lab results tracker?
Yes.
Is it showing? Okay. Where's the rest of it? Oh, I got to scroll up. Yes, yeah, so if we look at this, Yeah, things are definitely improved. Sodium, potassium, and when those are off, that's usually an indication of adrenal. Protein is better, it's still on the low side. So I would suspect you're getting plenty of protein in your diet. I would suspect stomach acid. So I would add, you know, bitters before your meals and enzymes.
I do enzymes. Sometimes I do bitters, and then when I remember, and hydrochloric acid. Okay. I'm wondering, I only take two HCLs, and I'm wondering if I should up it.
All right. Do you remember in the digestion about how do you determine that?
The HCL challenge.
Do an HCL challenge. Yeah. We can't guess at HCL because we either take too little. If you take too much, it hurts. And if you haven't done the test, you could be taking too little and it's not going to do much good. You also need to be taking zinc when you're taking that because zinc will help you make more of your own. So bitters and zinc will help you to make your own and then take the HCL as a Band-Aid until you get that up to speed.
I just started taking zinc again.
Okay. Yeah. Alkaphos is high. And it was okay here. It was high here, low here, high. How are you with fat digestion?
Fine.
Fine? You don't feel like you have a problem with that? Leaky gut is a possibility, especially if you have some autoimmunity. There's probably some leaky gut issue going on, your vitamin C deficiency. So, but why did it go, oh, this is a long time ago. So a year. A year ago, it was looking good, and a year before that, it was high. So I would maybe sit with yourself with what was different here a year ago than here, like with liver stress, with gut stress. Was this right after you did some sort of gut healing protocol? Was your, I don't know, did you move into a new place, get some new items, travel to a different country? But something changed in this year.
Yeah.
Right. Significantly. Liver enzymes, your ALT is a little high. Again, the liver gallbladder. You don't drink, right?
Nope.
Yeah. But there's some liver gallbladder stress. Cholesterol looks good. Triglycerides are high. So that suggests to me that there's some blood sugar stuff going on. Right. If you look at your HDL, triglyceride HDL ratio, it's better, but it's still at almost 2, which suggests some issues with blood sugar. So I'd look at insulin, I'd look at hemoglobin A1C. Your TSH looks fine. So if you catch the antibodies early, while your TSH still looks fine, your total T4, though, is going down. So you want to start working on the autoimmunity. And in the thyroid module, at least in the Thyroid Revive and Thrive that we have for clients, but also in our thyroid module, we have this whole booklet on what do you do for resistance, what do you do for autoimmunity, and the step-by-step-by-step. And that's thyroid balancing step-by-step. And your free T4 is really low, 3. So again, you need to be looking at all the different aspects of it, right? So there's autoimmunity, there's classic no real cause hypothyroidism, which really there's no such thing as no real cause. But your TSH is inching. Well, no, it was low here. It was a little better here and then up. Inching up, but you found some antibodies, so that may be why. Lower than you had before on the T4 production, but your conversion is way low. Your T3, your free T3. That should be 3 or more. 3 is the minimum of the ideal range. And the ratio, if you look at this, this is why I came in here. See this TS diagrammer tool? Now we don't have your free T4, so we don't know where this is at. But given that this is at the normal range and this is at the low range, we'll just guess at it here. So this diagrammer scale helps you to figure it out. Your TSH is at, what was it, 2.4? So we look at 2.4, and it's right around here. I wonder why that line is down the middle. So your TSH is here at 2.4. Oops, we'll enable editing. Okay, good. So 2.4 goes in here, 2.4. Your free T3, which is the bottom one, was at 2.4, right? 240, which would be here. Some labs reported on a scale that's off by, you know, a factor of 100 just because of the mg's, pg's, whatever they do. So this is where your free T3 is. So that's what was it, 2.4? Let me look back. One thing back. Oh, it went all the way to the bottom again. Why? Okay, I can't grab this to push it up. It's weird. All right. Okay. Did you do insulin? No. RBCs, 2.4, yeah. So 240 is what we're going to put it in as. But right away, you know, these should line themselves up. Now, your thyroid is at the low end of the normal range, your T4 production. So even if we guess it was somewhere like here or here, because this is the... yeah, this is the free T4, so we don't have a scale that measures it, but approximately the lowest end of the free T4 would be right here. So I'm just going to put an X there just to say. So you're off, right? Your conversion, you're under converting T4 to T3. Does that make sense? Your T4 is at a higher level than T3. This should be straight down. So selenium is a possibility. But I put 24, 2.4.
I've been taking selenium like pretty regularly. I recently started taking tyrosine because I know that the thyroid needs tyrosine in order to uptake the thyroid hormones.
Well, so, tyrosine is the core of thyroid hormone. Right. That's so, tyrosine's in the middle and the iodines are on the outside. So yeah, it's a critical piece. So low tyrosine can definitely contribute. So it's good to call.
So I think I'm only taking like 400 milligrams of tyrosine. Should I up that? Should I continue just taking that?
The only risk you run into is throwing off your serotonin. If you take too much tyrosine, which is a precursor to dopamine, and you don't also take like 5-HTP, which I think with your low melatonin, you could benefit from 5-HTP because 5-HTP goes to serotonin, goes to melatonin. So I would say if you're going to up it from there, add a little bit, maybe 50 milligrams of 5-HTP to the mix, just to make sure you don't throw that balance off.
When I've taken 5-HTP in the past, and maybe it's just the one that I'm taking, my brain does weird things. Like I really feel my brain. It's bizarre.
Huh. Well, so, I wonder if that's dose dependent or if you took, like the lowest dose they sell is 50.
That's what I'm taking is a 50.
That's what you've taken? All right. Then if it causes something, a weird effect, then it's not a good idea. Right?
Yeah.
So you could try tryptophan.
I don't think we should be taking tryptophan straight, right?
You can. But if you have to take B6 to help it convert. Right? Some people, the risk of tryptophan by itself is it's I can't draw the picture. Is there some place to draw? Here we go. I'll draw it on here. Okay, so you have tryptophan. Oh, wow. Tryptophan. Okay. That goes to 5-HTP. I'll just put 5-H, which goes to serotonin. All of these need B6.
Okay,
but the problem with tryptophan is that it could potentially go down here into chironine, which could be brain toxic.
Right.
Okay. So, but if you supply the cofactors, and there's a couple of others, it's all in the neurotransmitter module, but I think magnesium might be one. And I don't remember all of the cofactors. They're listed there. But if you take the cofactors to push it this way, it's fine. Now, if you're going to do another oat at some point, you'll be able to see if this is happening. If you did an oat at one point, you could see if you have a tendency towards going down that way.
I did an oat, yeah.
You did. So look at your oat to see if you had, you know, some higher than average or higher than ideal levels of chironate and quinolinic. Okay. So, but some people do really well with the tryptophan and not with the 5-HTP.
Okay.
So it's just a matter of, and I think sometimes upstream metabolites versus downstream metabolites, right? If you give your body upstream metabolite, it can convert it to wherever it wants to go. So an example would be giving pregnenolone versus DHEA versus estrogen, right? You're doing all of them, but pregnenolone is the earliest on. And your body can say, oh, I got some extra pregnenolone. Where should I put it? And puts it where it needs to. Once you give it DHEA, it goes, oh, I have some DHEA. I can keep it and use it as DHEA, or I can convert it to testosterone, or I can convert it to estrogen. So it still has choices. When you get down to estrogen, it's estrogen. So there ain't no place for it to go, and you run the risk of excess. So whenever you give an earlier metabolite, you decrease the risk of overdosing, but you also increase the risk of your body preferentially sending it where you don't want it to go. Like in the pregnenolone, if you're like this high stress person and you don't work on lowering it, you give it more pregnenolone. It's like, yay, we can make more cortisol, right? So it goes down to cortisol and forget progesterone and DHEA and all the other stuff. So it's just it's a call. It's a judgment call. And that's why I like to start with little doses, but also tune in to see. And if something causes a problem, you can try to figure out what the problem was and why it did that. But it just may be giving the 5-HTP at that actually made too much serotonin. And you had too much serotonin. And serotonin excess is, you know, a problem as well as serotonin deficiency. Make sense? Whereas yes. If you give it at the tryptophan, it'll have the choice to convert some of it to 5-HTP and the rest of it to go downstream.
I looked at my oat. I have it right in front of me.
Okay. So what does it say about those pathways, the serotonin pathway?
Well, the chironic, the range is 0.17 to 2.2, and mm-hmm. mine was at 0.76, so it was on the lower
end. On the lower end, okay, yeah. And the quinolinic, that's related to the serotonin, or is that the dopamine?
I'm not sure.
Let's stay there.
Tryptophan metabolites, so the 5-hydroxyindoleacetic?
5-IAA, yeah. 5-IAA.
It's less than or equal to 4.3, and mine's 1.8. The quinolinic to
HIAA ratio, yeah.
Is 1.5, so it's on the higher end of normal.
It's on the higher end of normal. Okay. I would try it with a very low dose of tryptophan and just a little bit. But the real thing is you're trying to get the dopamine. You're trying to work on the tyrosine to get it to go to the thyroid hormone, right? So tyrosine can do many things. It can go and get converted to phenylalanine and then to norepinephrine, epinephrine, and support adrenals. It can get converted with iodine and make thyroid hormone. It can also go down to dopamine. So it's a multifunction thing. Right. And if you got a lot of adrenal stress and you got some thyroid issues, the chances of it actually mucking with this whole balance of dopamine is lower than it would be if you didn't have those other things going on. So you're probably fine with increasing it. But I usually do about 500 anyway, maybe 500 twice a day on tyrosine. I usually don't go much more than that.
500 of what?
Of the tyrosine, which is where we started from. And I got into this pathway to tell you how the tyrosine can muck up this pathway, but given what you're saying, it probably won't, and you're probably okay with it.
I had a neurotransmitter test done from another coach I was working with, and it's a test that was through neuroscience, and I have the results here in front of me. Can I share my screen?
You could, yeah. I've never held much I've never really had much success in working with those tests.
Really?
And there's a lot of reasons why, because when you do an initial one, you don't know if you're testing brain chemistry, gut chemistry, or other peripheral areas. And I've worked with people who have gone and done that testing and then worked with somebody who put them on a whole bunch of supplements, you know, from that company based on the results and not really seen results. So I prefer to look at oat test and amino acid test and then symptomatology. And then if you're on them, then you can sometimes tell by the excretion whether they're actually working. So GABA was elevated. Glutamate, PEA. I mean, all of these look
interesting. She said that she's never seen somebody with such low PEA. She said that this was, I think she was saying goiter. Like, if because of this, if I did not get this addressed, that I would end up with a goiter.
Really? That I'm not aware of. And PEA is a common, they use it a lot in ADD, in kids with ADD.
I tried to take the phenylalanine directly, and it was all bad. So I actually tried quite a few different neurotransmitter, like, supplements, and my brain was just, it was not good. So what I've decided to do is not go the neurotransmitter route and, you know, obviously go, you know, through the fact that my gut is obviously not working.
Yeah, the gut for sure. And this would say that since if the dopamine is truly low, then the tyrosine is going to be safe to take. Your serotonin is in the normal range. You're probably safe with taking the tyrosine to support your thyroid.
Okay.
Where we all started with all this in the first place. But you really need to address leaky gut, and you need to address other heavy metals, and you need to address stress. And all those things are going to make a difference in the Hashimoto's.
I wouldn't even. So with the fact that when I get into the sauna or when I'm doing this other detox protocol, that the fact that my thyroid swells up, what does that tell you?
That says to me that I think you're releasing toxins from your tissue, but you're not getting them out, and your thyroid's super sensitive. Thyroid is the most sensitive tissue in the body to any kind of toxins. So you're bringing those out and you're not flushing them. Do you sweat when you're in the sauna?
It's getting better. When I first was in the sauna, I was not sweating.
Yeah, so that's probably it, right? The heat is going up and your body's releasing toxins from internal stores, but not actually sweating them out. And they're recycling. So what you might want to do is start with the smaller, you're starting to sweat now. And is every time you go in there, or is it a length dependent thing with the thyroid?
Well, I'm usually in there for 20 minutes. Okay.
So it swells up every time you're in there for 20 minutes?
Pretty much. Yeah. I started taking the Ultra Binder, the Quicksilver Scientific Ultra Binder, which is a multi-spectrum binder. Taking the cofactors I know helps as well. Like if my thyroid is swelled up and I take, you know, the cofactors, you know, the selenium, you know, the other ones, then it will calm it down.
How long does it last for when it swells?
It depends on how quickly I can get those cofactors into my body.
So. Did you try taking them before you go in?
You know, I'm sure I have. It's been hit or miss, I think, because I don't know. It's like, even if I have taken them and then my thyroid swells up. And so it would be helpful for me to know exactly here's my regimen, like take, you know, this much of these supplements and then get in the sauna and then do the binder. Right. So it's like a learn.
Yeah, it's a learning experience, of course. But I would say, you know, take a couple hundred micrograms of selenium and maybe 30 milligrams of zinc and, you know, 350 milligrams of magnesium. Paint on some iodine, and actually you can paint iodine right on your thyroid.
Okay.
And see how that goes. All right. And then just get in and write it down. Write in how long you did it, right? And then how long before it swells up? What's the intensity of the swelling, right? Is it over time getting better as you sweat more? You know what I mean? And you could cut it back. You could cut back the timing and just do 10 minutes for a while and see if that causes it to swell and try to find your sweet spot in there. Okay. Find a spot where it doesn't cause it to swell that you still get to sweat and then start gradually creeping it up.
Okay.
Right.
Does anyone have any experience with the Pectus Alcy?
I don't personally have experience with it, but I know I've had experience with people using it and having good results with pulling toxins out. But it's a slow heavy metal detox. Some folks try to do these heavy metal detoxes and they're miserable throughout and they're yanking all their good minerals out. I think Pectus Sol is a good one. It's actually a real good one, and I recommend it a lot with Hashimoto's. The other thing I recommend it a lot with the thyroid is OxyCell. Have you heard of that from Apex? It's a cream that has glutathione, SOD, catalase, and a bunch of other antioxidants. And you can actually put it right over the thyroid tissue. You just put it right on your thyroid. OxyCell, OxyCell.
Oh, OxyCell, okay.
Yeah.
And yep. Who's it made by?
It's made by Apex.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's a good one too for helping to dissipate some of the swelling in the thyroid.
Okay, my big concern was am I hurting myself by my thyroid swelling up? You know,
I'd rather see it not happening. I'd rather see you find that sweet spot of how long you can be in without it swelling, and then gradually creep that up. And do some of the cofactors and make sure you're hydrated before you go in. Do some of those, you know, the mineral rehydration drops from energetics.
Yeah, I have some.
Yeah, put that in your water so that you're really hydrated. And just gradually build it up. Does yours have a temperature control? Or it's just a straight, it doesn't, no.
Well, it has...
Oh, it has the one heater.
I have to relax on it. So I can do
one or two. Well, you could try two things, right? Try doing it with just the one for 20 minutes and see if that causes it, if that causes less of it. And then you could try doing the two, but for shorter length and just play with that. Play with the exposure amount. Because anytime something's swelling up like that, it concerns me, right? It concerns me that, you know, you're releasing toxins, the thyroid's absorbing them, it's getting inflamed. So I would, and then play with the OxyCell and see if that makes a difference.
Okay.
Right? And the OxyCell you can do morning and night. Okay? And try iodine on it. See if that, you know, you've done it on your breast, you might as well try it on your thyroid. The breast and the thyroid are the two tissues that have the most of it.
So I've been doing iodine painting. I have not been taking it. Oh, the other thing is if I take iodine orally, it also swells my thyroid.
Then that would say don't put it on your thyroid.
So, but if I paint, if I do breast painting, or I put it on my arms, and yeah. I'll just do, a couple drops on my arms, or I'll do, you know, I've done as much as, 8 drops on my breasts, and it's okay. So it's really weird that I can take iodine, you know, I can put it on my skin and I'm okay. But if I take it orally, it's...
Same amount? When you take it orally, you take in the same amount? Or
very small amounts. I mean, the amount that's in my supplement's only 150 micrograms.
That's really small. And you don't take it orally.
I have started taking the sea iodine, which is from seaweed.
Yeah.
And that seems to be okay.
All right. So maybe it's too concentrated. I would tend to recommend an iodine load test.
Okay.
And see what that shows. You will have to take a 50 milligram dose of it, which they send you during the test. And I'll be curious to see, watch how you react to that. It's a high dose. Right. And some people take it and they go, holy cow, I feel better than I've felt in years. We know that there's some, you know, some deficiency there. So even if that happens, I usually have people start to supplement even before the results come back. Because we know if they say, oh my God, I felt awful, then it is either that they're plenty sufficient in this over the top, put them over the top, or that it's a toxicity thing and it's creating an imbalance as a result of, you know, just too much of the bromine getting released from the tissue. And that could be it.
Have you had any luck with taking sea salt for removing the halides from the thyroid?
Yeah. So I usually will have somebody do that. They'll be doing iodine, so you're displacing the bromine. And when you do the iodine load test, do the halides with it. So it'll do all of the halides and do the spot test with the loading dose. That way you'll get, it's about $150. It's more expensive than doing the individual, but you get a real big picture. Like once you take a big batch of iodine, how much bromine more are you excreting? If not much, then you probably don't have a lot in stores, because with that massive dose, you're going to displace a lot of it. But if the bromine goes up after you take the iodine, that means that, oh, you've got a lot of bromine toxicity and you've got to move it, but you're going to want to move it slowly because you don't want to overtax your system with trying to get rid of it. So okay. I usually will do the salt is good, vitamin C, but not at the same time as the iodine. And we have a whole thing on it. We even have it in the Vital community on iodine. There's a whole thing we did, so you can go back in there and look. And we have it in the micronutrient module. There's an iodine chapter. So go back there and really review that. And it talks about bromine toxicity.
Okay. As far as when you use salt, the salt protocol, like 1 or 2 teaspoons a day of I'm doing a salt brine.
Mm-hmm.
Should I also be taking a binder when I do that?
That could be a good idea. I mean, anytime you're taking something that's going to displace any kind of toxins or heavy metals from your tissue, to have a binder that's going to pull it out is a good thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Who is the iodine load testing through?
Hakala is the best one that I've seen. Hakala. They do it at Doctor's Data, but Doctor's Data doesn't send you the iodine pills. So you got to buy a whole bottle of iodine in order to take it. So they just send you a couple of iodines and they say, here's how to do it. And they're really nice. It's family run and they'll answer your questions. You can call them up and make an account with them as a practitioner and you get like 20% off. And then you can send people there and get a discount. You just have to tell them you're a practitioner. Tell them you're working with me.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. I'm going to a thyroid hormones doctor on Thursday.
Are you conventional or functional?
Well, it's Austin Thyroid, I think, is the doctor. And from what I can tell, it looks like she's like both. Because she has on there like a release that says we use unconventional methods. So that tells me that she's, you know, more probably on the functional side than the traditional side.
So here's how you know. What tests do you recommend for my thyroid?
Right.
If she doesn't give you the full long list, walk out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because then she doesn't know anything. Right? She says, 38, you're only a little bit above the range. Walk out. Right. There are some that go, wow, your number. I had somebody come in and say, oh, I just got diagnosed with Hashimoto's. And I'm like, looking at the labs, I'm like, it's 18. I usually wouldn't label you Hashimoto's. I'd say you have a problem and let's work on it. But this doc said, no, you got to work on this. This is super important before it becomes a problem. I'm like, yeah, you had a good doctor. Right? Because they knew the value of doing those hormones. There's so many of them. Even some famous doctors who I won't mention, I've had people come to me after they've been to some of these doctors whose names you'd recognize if I said them, that came back and I looked at her and said, did anybody ever check you for Hashimoto's? She had TSH going up and down and up and down and up and down. If you've been through the thyroid module, when you go through it, you'll see that that's a classic sign of Hashimoto's, right? If they're just testing TSH and they see it go, oh, it was bad this time. Oh, it's good this time. Oh, it's bad this time. That's a classic sign of Hashimoto's. They never tested her.
When you're looking at my results, would you say that I have Hashimoto's or do I have?
I personally don't make diagnoses. So I would say you have, where is it? 38. Yeah. I would say that in the TPO, I would say you have some antibody activity against your thyroid for sure. I don't like to call it, I don't want you to have a disease that you can hang your hat on and say, I have Hashimoto's. Right? Psychologically.
Well, Hashimoto's is autoimmune versus...
Yeah, you definitely have an autoimmune thyroiditis. Is it a thyroiditis? Probably. You're telling me your thyroid's swelling. Right? But, yeah, but I mean, it's 38, according to their scale, 34, right? So it's like, it's barely up. I had somebody with a 78 and they told her, oh, it's not bad. There's bullets shooting my thyroid. I want it as close to zero as possible, right? As close to zero. You really, it's rare to see somebody get it to zero because there's some of that antibody will get produced just by the normal breakdown of the tissue and it produces, you know, some little antibodies to kill it. I've seen them as low as 3, 5. As soon as it hits 8 or 10, then I'm like, you know, let's just work on whatever habits you have that could be doing this to keep it from going higher than this, right? But once it's over 10, it's like, you know, it's there. You really do need to work on it. And leaky gut, big time. Your mental, emotional stress. There might be heavy metals. Doing what you're doing with this Quicksilver detox, I would add the Pectisol if you want to, because that can help pull out. And if you do have heavy metals, it could take it out. You know, and you don't want to get too many tests and you're like, what do I, which one do I work on? I have all these things to work on. It gets confusing. You know, work hierarchically and get your gut cleaned up. Gut and blood sugar got to get cleaned up. Or I've seen people reverse their Hashimoto's in 4 or 5 months. I mean, Hashimoto's that had been diagnosed for 50 years just by getting their blood sugar balanced.
Wow.
Okay. So it can happen. You just, and the stress is big. So supporting your adrenals, not just with herbs and elixirs and all that, but supporting your adrenals with your diet and meditation, whatever else. Like when you go in that sauna for 20 minutes, use that time to meditate, do heart math, right? Don't bring in the book and don't bring in the phone. You know, that's my tendency. I'll get in the sauna and I'll bring the computer and I'll bring the phone and, you know, no, let's just go in there and meditate. Yeah.
So, okay.
The food, right? Have you gained, lost? Is your weight been stable or have you gaining?
I'm gaining like at an unusual rate.
Yeah. Yeah. And you need a free T3 again, and you need a free T4 so that we can compare them. Because I want to know, do you have a binding globulin problem? Because estrogen supplementation will increase your thyroid binding globulin. So your T, this is going down. It was at 7.2 and now it's at 6.9. So it's the production from your thyroid is going down. We don't know whether, if we see the free T4, we'll know if the free T4 is below the lower range here of optimal, then we'll think about possibly what's giving you a thyroid binding globulin issue. And thyroid binding globulin, like people on birth control pills, generally have too much thyroid binding globulin and their total hormones are normal, but their free hormones are low, right? So estrogen can do that. So you said you're taking some of the estriol. Wait, I have some of that here. They sent me a sample. It's this one you're taking, right? The ProAdapt.
Yep.
And the EstAdapt. Yeah. Do you take them internally or do you take them topically?
Topically. I've been putting everything down in the nether regions.
Yeah, good place for it. That's the way. I was going to say, if you're not, a lot of people are putting it on their wrists. Some weird doctors, I don't know where they get it from, are telling them to put it on their belly. Like, I don't know about you, but, you know, the people I see, most of their accumulation of fat is on the belly. And you don't want to put hormones on a fatty area, because it'll just get settled into the fat and then it gets released whenever it wants to get released. You have no control. You put it on the thinnest areas or the mucosa. Right. Okay, good. Yeah, so see where this says if it's hyperthyroid. Yeah, it doesn't say. All right. Anyway. We good? Oh, yeah. So if free T4 is high, this might be in the wrong, I'm going to have to look at that. Because estrogen will cause the free T4 to be low compared to high, because it will cause, I'm going to make a note. Lynn, will you make me a note to look at that? Because I'm not sure that that's correct.
Can you repeat that?
It's well, the column for thyroxin, free T4, says in high, it says estrogen dominance. But I've got to look back at the pathways, because my understanding is that maybe it's estrogen dominance versus estrogen excess. So I'll look that up. I want to look that up to see if that's actually accurate. Because I would think that the free T4 would be low in someone who's taking exogenous estrogens because it increases the binding globulin. It makes sense?
So when I get my test results, because I'm sure this doctor is going to run more test results. So when I have all my test results back, I'll sit by myself again so we can...
Yeah, put it back in here. Have you put it in that... blood chemistry software, you'll learn a lot from that.
Yeah, I sent it to you.
Yeah, but I mean, look in there and just start poking on, pressing the links in there to learn a tremendous amount as you go through. The link to them, that was in there? Oh, yeah, that's right. They changed the name of it. Wow, that's what it looks like, huh? The new report, is it black like that? Holy cow.
Just that first screen is.
Wow.
I don't know why.
Oh, wow. This is beautiful. This is much nicer than it was. Wow. Holy cow. It's all new. Okay. Yeah. So adrenal, blood sugar, GI, immune, you know, all the things we just talked about.
We're not seeing your screen if you want to share.
Oh, you're not. Okay. Let me share that. I have to go back to Zoom. I thought I was sharing my whole screen.
You stopped sharing when I shared.
Oh, that's right. Okay, share. I'll just share my screen. That way I can... It'll look kind of funny right away because you're going to see yourselves. But and I go to here. I go here. Well, so this is... If anybody hasn't run their blood chem software in a while, look at what this new report looks like. Has a really nice index. I bet you can click them. Yep, that's pretty cool. You can click right to those pages. It brings it right up. So micronutrients. I love this. Let's look at your micronutrients. Okay, so it says some vitamins. And that. So let's look at the nutrient deficiencies page. Probability of dysfunction, vitamin D, thiamine. Okay, so take this seriously. This has some good stuff in it. B6 is low. I'm surprised because I was thinking D6 would be high.
Well, I think it's this is actually meaning that I'm okay on B6.
That's right. But I would think that your B6, based on some of the symptoms I was, you know, based on just some of the stuff we talked about, that it might be low. But
my vitamin D, what's weird is that I take vitamin D. I've been taking the liquid vitamin D. The thorn.
Yeah.
I'll take like 20,000 IU. And
what was your level?
Low.
Let's see. No, where's the, it's inside? Blood test results. Okay. Wow, look at this. This is very nice. They didn't give you a summary of how many you have below normal, optimal. So D, has anybody seen this before? Have you run these? This must be brand new because we've run them not that long ago. Nice report. I think our ERC people are going to be very impressed. Thyroid. Yeah, so they range it here, right? See, that same kind of thing that we did, right? Optimal, but below optimal. So definitely have this conversion issue here. And, you know, way above, they put it way above from a functional perspective, but I've seen them so much higher. Yeah, 36. And so do you have a SNP, a VDR SNP, or there's a bunch of SNPs that might cause it?
What is it? Which one is it?
VDR. There's a couple of VDRs, vitamin D receptor. And then FUT2 can play in. And there's a couple of others that I'm not remembering off the top of my head. But they are definitely in the CMDS program where we have the presentation on the blood sugar related to the gut. And there's definitely all the vitamins are in there. And you can see what there's a whole page on vitamin D SNPs. Let's see if I have one handy, I think.
So what do you do if you have the vitamin D SNPs and your body's not absorbing vitamin D? What do you do?
You need to take more on a regular basis.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes if it really doesn't shift, I would run the 125 and look at the ratios there and see if there's some kind of liver or kidney issue going on. But let me see. There was one here that had the gut. I had a nutrigenomics one up. Genes, Diet, and Health. Here we go. I have some of them in here. So you can see what they are. Okay, so genomic testing, 23andMe. Nutrient-related one. Here's vitamin D. Can you see it?
Yeah.
So, take a screenshot of that and then look them up in your SNPs. Okay. And this is in this, you guys have access to this, the Genes, Diet, and Health. I don't know if any of you came to it, but you have access to it. And there's a, Lynn, do you remember what the link is to that? I can find it really easily.
I think I have your presentation.
Yeah. If you go to this page, you all have access to it. And if not, I'll give you the link right here. But it was the Webinar Series 2008. It might be in here. Okay, yeah, Genes, Diet, and Health. Thank you. And I'll just give you the link. Yeah, so this has all of the slides. So there's stuff at the top then day one slides, day two slides, and then it has the presentation. There's a separate thing with the gene charts. So this is good stuff. You know, most of it you find elsewhere in NEPT, but it's nice to have it all together. Let me find this. I'll put this into the chat.
Yes, I have a gallbladder.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else have thoughts or anything for Lynette for this? Let me see. So Lynn Rose said she took a while to get sweating good in there. I just have to look at it and I sweat. Get in there and I'm like.
I wish.
I've
heard that if you don't sweat, it's because you're full of toxins.
Yeah, and it's oftentimes an adrenal thing too. You know, when your adrenals are maxed out, you don't sweat. That's common.
Okay.
Let's see. Anything else in here that I missed? That. Yeah, so Lynn said she just did a couple of weeks ago, and Tony said she did it last week with two tests and saw that. I love that new report. That's very good. Adapt Best, I believe, is what she said. It was an estrogen cream. No, it's called is this the one? Est Adapt. And the one for progesterone is Pro Adapt. They're by Biomatrix. I had to take them off the market for a while. At least they had the progesterone, they called it something different, but they had it on the market for a long time. It was a great progesterone, and you could take it as drops, and a lot of women were really having good results with it, with calming PMS and menstrual stuff, but also with sleep, you know, and then they took it off the market, and I think that the government cracked down on anybody that was offering progesterone that was orally based, because the same thing happened with Bezwecken, couldn't get there anymore, couldn't get their estriol, they had estriol suppositories, I bet they're going to come back and call them something different. You know, call them whatever the herb is that they extracted from, because they're like, oh, you can't sell hormones. I think they're cracking down on it. So that might be why.
I was reading an article that said if you're taking bioidentical hormones topically, to put them below the belly button because you don't want it to go through the absorption and into the breasts, and so you want to do it below the waist. And they also said to take all of them in the morning because that's when all of your hormones are at their highest. So instead of taking them in divided doses, to take them all at once in the morning. And so that's what I've been doing. So
yeah, I like to look at the rhythm. So like with DHEA, I think it's kind of has a rhythm throughout the day. So I don't like to give too much at one time. I do like to give it in three doses. Progesterone, if somebody's having trouble with sleep, I will try some of it at night. So, but usually I give any estrogen stuff I do in the morning. And I like the idea of calling it just below the belly button. I think mucous membranes tend to absorb better. You do have to be careful if you're having sex with an opposite sex partner, because then, you know, you could be sharing the wrong hormones with your partner, right? So that's an issue. If that's the case, you can always do anal mucosa, which works just as well, but it just isn't as, you know, perceived as clean and cleanliness, whatever the word might be. But that's a possibility. Gallbladder, yes. Anything else? Anybody else have any thoughts you want to pipe in or questions that I missed? Oh yeah, so you Mark, that you're not exercising. What's the reason for that?
I have no energy. Uh-huh. I feel like in the morning I feel like crap. I have more energy at night.
What about some bursts? Just a couple of small bursts.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I started using the vibration platform that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing that. I started jumping on the rebounder like 10 minutes a day.
Right.
So just little stuff like that.
Do you have a staircase in your house?
No.
No.
No, but I was, I've just been consuming information like it's going out of style. So just, you know, realizing that, you know, the insulin resistance is also related to, you know, exercise. Like if I'm exercising, that helps to control the insulin resistance. And so, you know, I have it all in my head, you know, it's just a matter of getting the routine down and getting to the gym or doing.
And it's inertia, right? It's hard to get started, but once you get started, so you don't have to go to the gym. So get it out of your head that you have to take all that time to go to the gym, because that takes time. Is what can you do right there? Can you do some burpees? Can you do some jumping jacks if you had stairs, or get a little stair stepper thing and up and down on the stair stepper, right? Simple stuff like that you can do that. It doesn't take much time, and you can do them in bursts, 30 seconds here, 2 minutes there, and you don't have to have a lot of energy or a lot of time, and they're not going to just wipe you out. So I would really, you know, address the mindset piece that's keeping you from pushing past it. And I know it's serious, because when I, you know, if I injure myself and I'm not running for a while, and then I can't get myself motivated to do other forms of exercise, it's hard to get started back. But once I start back, it's hard to not do it. Like today's been a hard day because I haven't had any time to exercise.
Do you have any theories as to why my feet hurt?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you've done anything that would cause like a plantar fasciitis, that can be a possibility. But so, you know, you want to go back to, when did it start? How did it start? What makes it better? What makes it worse? I think the reason I asked you about achy versus burny, I want to differentiate neuropathy from, you know, a muscular type of thing. So what you might want to do is, sometimes you treat it in certain ways to see how it responds to determine what it really might be. So you want to go in there and see if there's particular motions that make it better or worse. So that would identify the structures. So if you have your foot like this, right, and when you bend it up this way, it's worse, that's causing a stretch on these extensor muscles, and it may be that these extensor muscles are shortened, right? So that would give you a clue. Well, maybe I get like one of those tennis balls and you can get massage balls on Amazon for real cheap, and you start rolling them and do one foot and not the other and see if the one foot that you do gets better. If it gets worse when you do this actively, like you pull, like you contract to go like this and it gets worse, then that is more of an indication that there's some muscular stuff as opposed to stretching. So it's a contractile thing when you go like that. If that makes it worse, then there's probably some strain or something. It's kind of weird to have it bilateral, right? And bilateral stuff is usually, you know, centrally located unless it was some sort of injury or, you know, running on bad shoes or, you know, things like that. So I would play around with it to see what makes it better or worse, you know, different side to side motions, pushing against. So if you don't move it and you push against and it hurts more, that would be more the muscles in the underside of the foot. So the extensor muscles having a problem, right? When you pull this way, does it hurt your calf, right? Or does it hurt the front of the calf or the back of the calf? So just like really play around and try to figure it out, what might be the cause of it. You could play with it and go, okay, if it's inflammation, then ginger, turmeric, that sort of stuff, and maybe even doing compresses or soaks with that. If it's more of a tension, like the muscles are contracted, magnesium, valerian, other things like that, but a magnesium soak, like an Epsom salt soak, could help. One of the things I have, my son is always spraining his ankle. So he does this thing where he alternates hot, cold under the faucet in the bathtub. So as hot as he could stand for his, you know, 2-3 minutes and as cold as he could stand. And he alternates back and forth. And then he takes castor oil. Castor oil helps move lymph. So you can actually take some castor oil and massage it. You want to massage this way up towards the body, right? So this way to push it and get in there and really work with the castor oil. You can do some compressy type things where you even soak socks in, you know, ginger tea or something like that, put them on and then wrap them and sleep with them overnight so you expose it. Chinese medicine, they use a lot of, they just slice the ginger and they put it over areas like knees and things like that that are contractile and inflamed. So there's a lot of things you can try. And some of those things you'll try to see what makes it better will help you identify what the cause is. It's sometimes hard to figure out what the cause of a pain is if there wasn't like a specific injury, mechanism of injury type thing, right? My son will call me up and say, this happened, that happened, the other thing. He explains what happened. Oh, you did this, that, and the other thing, right? But without having that specific, like this is when it started. But think back to when was the last time you didn't feel it.
I noticed that it's definitely worse if I wear soft-soled shoes, like squishy bottom shoes, versus hard-soled shoes. So I don't know if that's, I don't know what that is, but sometimes I get out of bed and I step on the ground and it just, both my feet are, they hurt so bad. And then there are other times when I'm fine. So part of me is like, okay, is it inflammation? Is it... Mm-hmm. Is it arthritis? Is it, which is inflammation?
So. It is, but it's not necessarily, because a rheumatoid arthritis is more of an inflammatory, but our osteoarthritis is more of a, you know, bone spur. And that's usually comes from a previous injury and overuse and alignment being off for a while. I've had that happen where my ankle just started hurting. Like, what the heck is wrong with my ankle? What did I do to it? And at one point I thought, well, maybe it was a compression fracture, because I tried to go back to when it first started, and it was when I had started to do some big bursts when I was running, right? And I usually don't. I usually just run slow and steady. But I laid off of it for a while, and I was real gingerly with it, and I did ultrasound on it, and I did ginger compresses, and I did all that stuff, and it went away by itself. So I don't know what it was. You know, so sometimes you don't know what it was because it just kind of comes on suddenly, but it could have been some sort of, could be magnesium deficiency and it caused them to contract. So looking at your magnesium status, magnesium oil rubbed on them, you know, and just play with things to see what makes it better.
Okay. I usually take magnesium citrate, usually in large doses, because I need it to stimulate my bowels because I'm constipated a lot, which is, you know, I think hypothyroid, right?
Hypothyroid, yeah.
And then I'll take magnesium glycinate. So those are the two types of magnesium I usually take.
Try the, getting the oil and just massaging it into your thing. For my first experience with magnesium oil, I was at a festival and some guy had magnesium oil. And he goes, I'm like, oh, yeah, right. Well, you're smelling snake oil? Like, no, 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 try it. Do you have any things that hurt? And I just happened to have this elbow that was hurting me because I had it back, got banged from a cart that was going down the aisle in an airplane, and I'm sitting there like this, and the cart bangs me in the elbow. So it was still hurting from that. I said, okay, I'll give it a try. So he said, rub it in. We rubbed it in. And the next day, the pain was gone. I was like, okay, sell me some, right? And I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to be this miracle worker, and everybody that comes to see me, I'm going to have all these great results. And I didn't really have those results with everybody else with that severe, you know, or significant an impact. But you never know, like whatever it was, and it was probably because it was kind of inflamed and stiff. Who knows? But it's certainly worth a try.
I have some, so I'll put some on it.
Put some on it and do it consistently. Do it every night. Do you have cramps in other areas of your body?
Nope, just my feet.
Just your feet? Yeah. Yeah, so stretch them, massage them, figure out what makes it better or worse. That'll help. And see what you can do to get it better.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's not going to make you want to exercise.
Yeah, it's definitely a deterrent.
All right. Anybody else have any questions or comments? Lynn Rose said exercise before you get in the sauna. You want to explain the rationale for that? To get the sweat going, you mean? Yeah. Yeah.
Get the toxins moving, too.
And get things moving, yeah. It doesn't have to be huge. Just a, you know, a couple of bursts would be sufficient, right? Okay. Yeah, and that's what Lynn agreed with me on. Less is best until you sweat well. So just keep, you know, start lower, build it up. Because I don't want to see you getting your thyroid swollen. That's concerning. That there, you know, it's not good. And try the OxyCell, see if that helps.
Yeah, I'm gonna get some.
Yeah, I think I heard numbers were better a year ago in reference to the liver. And Susan, I think I heard the numbers. What? Say that again, Susan. What was that? Do you know what you meant by that? I'm not sure what you meant by that. Maybe I missed the earlier. Oh, she says, could it, all the detox have something to do with the numbers, the liver numbers? It could be. Because the liver's starting to, you know, get aggravated by those oxidative byproducts. Lynn Rose, lecithin. What's with the lecithin? I like lecithin. What are you thinking of there? You want to undo your? What were you thinking of with the lecithin, Lynn Rose? I unmuted you.
For the inositol, she said she took. I mean, and she said, deal with the fats and emulsifying the fats. Choline and inositol in it.
Oh, it's choline and inositol in there, so you wouldn't have to take the separate inositol. Got it.
Yeah, less than to your smoothies or whatever.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's phospholipid. It's protective of the myelin sheaths and the brain tissue, and it's detoxifying. So there's a lot of things that that could be good for.
Yeah, I take sunflower lecithin.
You do?
Supplements, yeah.
Okay. Lynn put up the omega-3 content, the spreadsheet I was talking about earlier. So go back through this. And Lynn put up the link to the chronometer. We always copy this chat log, gets copied in and is loaded onto the page with the recording so you can see it. But if there's any links you want right now, just copy paste them out. You can actually just start at the top of the chat log and go whoomp all the way down and then say copy and then paste it into a Word doc or something like that. And that way you can just keep the ones you want and delete the rest of it.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Makes it easy. Okay. Is that it? Anybody else? We good? Did you learn something? Well, Susan, what'd you learn?
What did I learn? Oh, the whole thing about the hormones. I had no clue about the estrogen binding the T4. Mm-hmm.
It increases thyroid binding globulin, which then will cause the T4 to be bound.
That's really important because it seems like so many of us have.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oops, we stopped.
Complex autoimmune things.
Mm-hmm.
And hormonal things, and we're all doing all these things to get internet's not good right now.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a great.
My internet's.
It's all in the thyroid module too. Like everything that we're learning on these things are in your modules. So I love that we do so much of this on these calls, because then when you go back to the modules, it's like, oh, familiar. And it sinks in better because it's not like all brand new, you know. That's at least how I learn best. So, all right. And how's everybody doing with their modules? Are you making your way slowly through? This is like, these calls are like a little this, a little that, pulling it together. The modules will pull it together. And it's a sequential, like explaining to you the whys and the wherefores. Okay? I spent a lot of time making those things. So please consume them.
I've consumed most of the videos. But I was consuming them while driving.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go back and take all the tests.
And take them again. But sometimes I've done things. I did Paul Bergner had a really cool insulin resistance thing. And I'll tell you how old it was. It was on cassettes. And I ordered his cassette deck and I was listening to it in my car, and it tells you how old my car is. It still has a cassette deck. And I would listen to them, and I listened to them over and over and over again. And every time I listened, there were a few new insights. Because, you know, we only really absorb about 10% of what we hear. So when you're driving in the car, if you're watching it, you might absorb more because you've got the visual in there too. So don't be afraid or think you're dumb to that you can't go back. That's the thing about this versus school. You know, in school, you're sitting there, you're taking notes like crazy. You go back and like, what did he say? And you lost it, right? Especially some of the clinical insights. And so with this, you get to go back. These are good things to listen to again while you're driving, right? Or while you're exercising, because you don't have to watch necessarily. And it just, the more and more you hear it, the more and more it sinks in. The more and more I say it, the more and more it sinks in for me. So, you know, stuff that wasn't necessarily committed to memory that I'd always have to look up, I kind of have a lot of those ranges in my head right now. I couldn't have said that 6 years ago. But the more I talk about it and look at it and explore it and get into it. And there's some interesting things when you understand the concept of biochemical pathways. And I know I'm really geeky and I get really scientific in this stuff, but it's super important when you get a test result back that you're going, I wonder why. Then you can start looking it up. So I had somebody who came back with a methylation pathway test and her adenosine was high. And I'm like, adenosine high? I've never seen that before. What does that mean? So I just started looking at that pathway and what's before adenosine in the pathway that would make it be high if maybe that was pushing too much down or what, but really what's usually is the case, what comes after it and why is the adenosine staying high and is the next part low? And adenosine converts into AMP, ADP, and ATP. What are those? ATP's energy currency. So high adenosine and she had low energy. She wasn't converting downstream. So then the more we looked, then we discovered that zinc and magnesium are important cofactors for pushing that way. So in order to go down the pathway to make ATP, she needed more zinc. And then in order to go down this other degradation pathway for adenosine, which brought in another place, she needed magnesium. And we just discovered that she was low in zinc and magnesium. So it's really cool when you can not necessarily have a pathway committed to memory, but you understand the concept of if something's high, it doesn't mean you're taking too much of it, right? And same thing with the oat. If something's high, it often can mean it's a low functioning of vitamin B6 or B12 or whatever. So it's really, I think it's really fun to be able to get it and look at it and go, okay, I don't know. I've never seen this test result before, but let's look it up and let's think of it in terms of being a health detective and a sleuth. Lynn? Go ahead.
When you have a pathway like that and you're replacing something that's downstream or upstream, is that a permanent thing? Is that something you have to always do, or does it ever adjust?
Interesting. So I then went and looked, well, is there genetics related to this? Well, there was a genetics related to this. And I looked her up, her gene, and she had a homozygous in two of the specific SNPs. So she was going to need to replace that. It's a 30% reduction of the activity of that enzyme, which could lead to a high, and she didn't have like super through the roof adenosine. She just had, you know, high enough that it was flagged. But yeah, so it depends. If it's a genetic thing, you're going to do it forever, right? If it's not a genetic thing, I mean, maybe not. If she went and lived on a you know, mountaintop in Tibet and meditated and didn't have all her lifestyle stress and ate perfectly, she could overcome it, right? But, and I know that's true because I have a lot of genetic SNPs, and I, if I'm traveling a lot, if I'm not sleeping, I supplement. But if I'm just like, you know, living on the beach, eating, you know, like good stuff, I don't bother with it and I feel even better than ever. So it's just a matter of looking and saying, is it genetic? Was there permanent damage from a surgery, right? Somebody's got a missing ovary or a missing, you know, part of their thyroid. They're naturally going to slow down that production. So they may have to supplement. So you have to look at that overall picture. And that's why the overall picture is so important. We're not looking at little pieces like the blind man and the elephant, right? We're not looking at just a trunk. We're not looking at just a tail. We want to look at the whole thing and say, oh, that's an elephant. That's not a tree trunk. That's not a snake. Know what I mean? And I think that modern medicine, Western medicine, gets stuck in a reductionistic mode. And then when modern medicine decides, oh, we don't like these drugs because they're hurting people, let's move over to functional medicine. A lot of them still have that same mindset of looking for the peg to fit in the hole, as opposed to looking at this big picture. So that's what I want you guys to be, why I want you guys to be different about that, because people need that. There's too many people just getting stuck in holes and, oh, you have an MTHFR, here's 15 milligrams of B6 and folate. And then they go into an anxiety attack, right? And they don't know why. Oh, just keep taking it. It's a Herxheimer reaction, or, you know, whatever. It's a detox reaction. Like, you know? So I want you to guys to be able to look at the logic of what people are doing and go, wait a minute. It don't make sense. Right. And what you do, Lynn Rose, with your homeopathics is looking at that whole timeline. And that's what I recommend people do. And we have that in our ERC. And you guys have the health tracker. There's a whole symptom timeline section. We're like, when did it first start? And what was happening right before? And some of the people that wrote their ERC getting to know you forms actually gave me this perfect timeline. They were like, well, in 2007, I did this. Oh, I was born here. And they just gave me this long list of stuff. And I'm like, wow, that sure made my job easier. But most of the time, you have to dig for that. So when did this first start? Oh, what was happening the year before that? Oh, what happened right before that? And one person, it was just horrific. And I can't remember the exact details, but it was, she went and she was complaining. She was like 17 or 14 or something, complaining about bloating. They couldn't find anything, so they put her on a medication. And then she went a couple of years later and complained about another GI symptom that was worse. And they said, oh, it's all in your head. And they gave her an antidepressant. And I mean, it just kept happening. And over time, she just kept being given all kinds of medications to cover up the downstream, and nobody was looking at why did this happen. I mean, a 14-year-old doesn't make it up that she's having, you know, diarrhea and bloating. I mean, it's like, it doesn't make sense, right? So that's the kind of stuff I want us to unravel. And don't be scared when somebody comes in and says, I've seen 15 practitioners and you're my last hope. And you go, bah! You want to throw up because it's like, how am I going to help you? But then when you see the holes, you'll be shocked. Like Susan, you saw that, right? When you talked to your niece, didn't you? Like you went, right?
Oh, totally. She just sent me a text. She's so broke that I'm having to just do skeleton supplements, you know, the cheapest ones. So I got her started on vitamin D and I think zinc and magnesium, you know, just the core things for the gut, basically. And she texted me a couple days ago saying, oh my gosh, I have never felt this good. For 3 days now, I am just on over the moon. She says, I'm not angry. I'm sleeping. She said, I'm not throwing up in the morning. Just all those, that list of those lupus symptoms that she had. So, I mean, I don't know how long it'll last because I know there's layers.
You saw, right, it's a layered thing. But what you did was you looked at it differently than these medical doctors who've been, you know, trained and practiced for decades. And you're going, how did they miss this? And how did they miss that? And didn't they talk to you about this? And that's where I want you to get. And don't be afraid when somebody comes in with their long stack, because there's probably huge holes, huge gaps in here, right? And some of them are easy holes. Like, oh, nobody told you that. Let's just do this, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I think the vitamin D was a key thing too. I think that was a biggie.
Poo-pooing the vitamin D. Nobody wants to test it. And oh yeah, as long as it's above 35.
And bifidobacter. I got bifidobacter. Yes.
Yeah. So cool. You guys are good. What's a flexible cell? Oh, Drina says, I wear LEMS, which are a flexible sole shoe, wide box toe, no pinching of toes. For good support, shoes do make a difference. I was wearing Rainbow, saw the chiropractor specialized in extensive limbs, and we did grafting, saw an acupuncturist that helped, but was the physical therapist that helped me that rotate the hip and build the calf muscles to eliminate pain. Yeah, so good points of, we look at the feet, but we also want to look at upstream, right? So is there something in your hip, in your knee, in your low back that might be contributing to a faulty gait pattern in the foot? Right. So those are, that's good points. Thank you, Martha. Who else? Cold, wet cotton socks on feet covered with wool sets overnight really works well. Good point. Yeah, copy all this stuff out and kind of look for it. Thank you for sharing, Lynette. I learned a bunch. Okay. Yay. That's why I love these calls. That was Tony. Anybody else? Last chance for questions, comments. Anybody have any successes you want to share real quick? Otherwise, we'll go. A lot of good people, got a lot of people on and staying to the end. So yay. Mary's on too. Mary's actually visiting. So she's in Austin. She's actually downstairs, probably in my kitchen watching it, or anyway. Anybody else? No? Awesome. Thank you, everybody. Good night. Good night. Good night. Keep doing great work and keep us posted at Lynette. I always like when you do your own to come back and share it. And Eleanor, I don't know if she's still on, but I want to hear more about her. Her person as well. Don't see her. All right. I see Brandon. Who else is on? Brandon, hi. Cynthia, Drina, Eva, Kim, Lynn Rose, Marcy, Martha, Susan, Tony, Valerie, two Valeries, 561, whoever that is, Mary. Great. You guys stay till the end. So great. Wonderful. Thank you. Mwah. Good night.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'll unmute you all so we can say goodbye. Say goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye, y'all.
Bye. Thanks for hanging around.
Good stuff. Thanks for sharing. And thanks, you know, a lot of times being vulnerable about your own stuff is a little uncomfortable, but you did it and you learned a lot and they learned a lot. So, okay.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thanks, Lynette. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.